Welcome to another episode of the Film Florida podcast. My name is John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Thanks for downloading this episode of the podcast. Before we get started, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the Film Florida podcast. The more downloads and listens, the better we show up in searches. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Finally, we still have our Film Florida merchandise page. Check it out at teespring.com/stores/filmflorida to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and now protective masks as well. Slater Bayless is a partner at the advocacy group at Cardenas Partners, one of the top political and government affairs firms in Florida. Slater has worked in local, state, and federal government policy issues for over two decades. In the early 2000s, he served in Governor Jeb Bush's administration. Preceding his tenure in the governor's office, Slater functioned as special assistant to the convention manager for the 2000 Republican National Convention. Slater earned a bachelor's degree in political science and communications from the University of Iowa. He later earned his master's degree in applied American policy and politics from Florida State University. Slater currently serves on the national board of the Maverick Pack, an organization that promotes next-generation leaders in public service, and we're thrilled to have him as Film Florida's government relations representative. Here's my conversation with Slater Bayless. Thanks for joining us on the Film Florida podcast, Slater.
Hey, John. Great to be with you. Thank you.
So we usually like to start our interviews with the guest's backstory. So help our audience get to know you a little bit.
Well, John, I enjoy long walks on the beach. I'm an avid reader. My turn-ons include Chicago sports. John, I'm like a lot of Floridians. I'm a Floridian by choice. I grew up much like you did. I grew up in the Chicagoland area.
Yep.
And it seemed to me that most people, friends of my parents, if they saved and had good careers, their reward was they got to retire to Florida. When I graduated from college, I thought to myself, well, why should I wait till I retire to get to live in the most dynamic state in the country with low taxes and wonderful weather? And I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but I grew up watching movies that were filmed in Florida, you know, Caddyshack, Cocoon, Body Heat, The Birdcage, which was really the first to, I think, movie to show off South Beach, Edward Scissorhands. I mean, there's just, there were so many of them that, I just had this idea in my head of what Florida could be. And it's turned out to be all those things. It's been wonderful.
So you found your way from the University of Iowa to Florida State University, but what kind of brought you into this, you know, political arena or government relations?
Yeah, well, John, when you grow up in Chicago, and you know this probably better than most of our listeners here in Florida, you aspire to go to the Harvard of the Midwest. And as you know, that's the University of Iowa, the mighty Hawkeyes. And in all honesty, my parents were both journalism majors. And so as a 18-year-old kid in high school, I wanted to pursue what my parents had. They were both very talented writers. And the University of Iowa had and has a world-class writer's workshop program.
Yes.
And so while at Iowa, my freshman year and my senior year were presidential elections. Okay. And so there's a tremendous amount of energy in that state. And both those years, I had a chance to meet all of the Democrats and Republicans running for the presidency. So it was a neat introduction to politics for me.
And keeping with that theme of, you know, getting to know candidates and presidential candidates specifically, you have a really long history with the Bush family. How did that come to be?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think for me, I'll give the great American poet Will Smith all the credit. Will Smith, as you might remember, kind of in the late 90s, had a great track about going to Miami. Talked about jet skis and a lot of really cool things. And one night, I remember the story, I bartended at the University of Iowa, and that was the last song of the night. And then I had to walk through minus 20 degree weather to get back to my house on campus. And Miami sounded like a great place. And then literally, John, the next day, our daily newspaper, the Daily Iowan, ran an op-ed by a guy running for governor of Florida about a Theodore Roosevelt style environmentalism and how important that was to the state of Florida. And at the bottom of the op-ed, it said Jeb Bush, Miami, Florida. And so I, you know, just Will Smith, and then Jeb Bush wrote something that resonated with me. I kind of just figured out how to get an internship on his campaign, and he and I just personally hit it off. And he's been a wonderful mentor and friend, and he was a great boss for me for gosh, six years or so.
And we're going to get a little bit to Governor Bush administration, but you've told me this story before, but I'd like you to share it with our audience, because I think it's a really unique perspective on your story about September 11, 2001.
Gosh, I don't know that I've ever told this story publicly, so to speak. So I'll try to be mindful with it. At any rate, I had accompanied Governor Bush, and we'd flown down with the president on Air Force One from Jacksonville, where we'd done an event with the Secretary Rod Page. The president had the Secretary of Education that afternoon, flown down to Sarasota. And there was the president was doing an event there on the next morning. And it was, you know, the afternoon on that flight was very, very relaxed. I mean, it was kind of the end of the day. There weren't any more trips. It was just a real low key flight. And it was, for me, it was actually the first time I'd been on Air Force One. And I'd heard these stories that if you pick up the phone next to your seat and call someone, they say, you know, please hold for a call from Air Force One. And so I had a list of 10 people, including, you know, folks like my high school principal that I just wanted to call and check in with. And so I'd kind of gotten through my 10 phone calls. They all went really well. And the friend of mine who was the president's personal aide offered to give me a tour of Air Force One. And again, this is the night, this is the evening before the world just changed. But it gives you an idea of kind of how things changed then. Right. he introduced me to the guy in the command bridge of the aircraft who ran all the Air Force One communications. And his name was like Colonel Johnson. He said, Colonel Johnson, I'd like you to meet Governor Bush's aide, Slater Bayless. And Colonel Johnson said, yes, we're well aware of Mr. Bayless's presence on the aircraft. So I wasn't as under the radar. You know, they say when you're in the end zone, act like you've been there. And I learned a valuable lesson that day. But look, the next morning, the world changed forever. Governor Bush was evacuated from the state capitol, given that he was deemed to be, you know, top five next threat, as there were still airplanes in the air. And, you know, we've all seen lots of things that happened in throughout the course of that day, that in terms of the way that people process information and reacted, and they're told in some really powerful ways, and some great documentaries that have come out since then. But there's, you know, a lot that happened behind the scenes that I think I'm still under the statute of limitations to keep confidential. I may have shared with you over a beer or two.
Yeah, I've always found it just, you know, it kind of hits home. I mean, it seems we all went through it, but in a sense, it almost seemed like it was a million miles away for some people, because we were just following on TV, just like we watch everything else. But when you share some of those stories, it really kind of hits home of how personal it was for so many people that day. So I appreciate you touching on some of those things. And you had mentioned working with Governor Bush, you spent a decent amount of time in his administration. What some people don't know is that Governor Bush was a huge supporter of our industry. Talk about your time in his administration and his support for our industry here in Florida.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, one of the things that Governor Bush was very disciplined about while he was governor of Florida is being the governor of Florida. He rarely spoke to media that was not Florida specific media. The only things he would do nationally, really, and he was in a unique place. His brother was the president, et cetera. So, you know, he just wanted to be very mindful of what his job was and what his brother's was. But he loved to tell the Florida story. It was one of Governor Bush's favorite things to do, to tell the Florida story. And for him, that was, you know, that was really three things. It was diversifying our economy. It was while you try to diversify the economy, making sure the pillars of the traditional Florida economy, which really revolve around tourism, are still in place, and trying to get people to move here to build our economy. And then, look, he did a lot in the education space, but Governor Bush understood the power of film, both on the local economies and the state economy, because of the amazing amount of money that is spent on high-end productions. But at the same time, he understood that every movie that shows Florida palm trees brings visitors here. And I mean, it's amazing. And look, and Governor Bush got that. And look, one of the things that that Governor Bush did that I would encourage every Florida politician to do is he insisted that every single person on the film crews for any of his campaign commercials were Florida crew. And that made a big deal to those guys that he ensured that those were Floridians. And look, at that time, Governor Bush had a policy, any Florida lottery commercials, any Visit Florida commercials, anything the state was doing were to be Florida crew.
So Slater, you started representing Film Florida in 2015. For those that may not understand, explain the purpose of a lobbyist. Specifically in our situation, why is it important to have your firm representing Film Florida in Tallahassee?
Yeah, well, look, John, first of all, let me say it's an absolute privilege to get to work with Film Florida. The things that you and your board and your team do here, I think, mean a lot to the state of Florida. And thanks for all you do. It's a privilege to get to work with y'all. When I worked for Governor Bush, I was in what was called OTED, which is where I was the deputy director of OTED, which is where Film Florida, all the film office was housed. And so I had a really nice connection and good memories from that time in Florida. When Tallahassee was designated the capital of Florida, it was right in the middle of the state, which is where you want your capital. It was, you know, you've heard the story. A guy set off on a horse from St. Augustine. Another guy set off in a boat from Pensacola. They met in the middle, and that's where the capital should be. But once air conditioning was invented and the state started growing south, all of a sudden Tallahassee is very removed from the rest of Florida. And as you know, it's also a complicated place to get to, just how interstate air travel works post 9/11. You know, the saying in really any state capital and or at the federal government that I subscribe to is, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu in politics. And so largely what our firm does, and I'm privileged to get to work with my business partner, Sarah Suskey, on all things Film Florida, but we're here 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So we give Film Florida a presence in Tallahassee. And I think we're able to explain to people not only the important things that they see in terms of digital media and television shows and movies, et cetera, that's happening in our world, but also to talk to people about what an important part of the economy the industry plays overall. And then, you know, look, everyone elected to office has a great idea on what they want to do to make things better. And sometimes because those people don't come from our industry, they don't fully understand what the impact would be on our industry. And so to be able to talk to those people and help them understand why something they may want to do either through an executive or a legislative function needs to be looked at a little differently, I think is a very important role of what government advocates and lobbyists play in our form of government. We kind of jokingly call ourselves freedom fighters because, you know, at the end of the day, most governments kind of have these ideas and they're usually very well intended, but they have these consequences that create a lot of things that take away people's freedoms because they're not sometimes fully thought out. So that's, I think, a large part of the role that we have a privilege to get to play for you in Film Florida.
And it's amazing whether it's, you know, you guys up there, whether it's us down here, it ends up being a lot of the same thing, which is continuing education, just making sure they understand. The more they understand, the more beneficial it can be for all of us. So
that's right. Well, and John, the other important thing I think, and you know this, and some of your listeners may not know this, in Florida, we've got 8-year term limits. And so, you know, largely by the time we've helped a policymaker, you know, choose a Mel Ponder or Holly Rashine, or, you know, list goes on and on of people who are great champions of our industry. As soon as we get them ready to go and advocate for our good agenda, they're terming out of the legislature and we start again with a new class.
Right, right. So, you know, speaking of some election stuff, there's obviously been enough attention to the presidential election. So we'll steer clear of that one. So let's focus on the Florida Senate and House a little bit. What are your kind of high level takeaways?
Back in 2008, I co-authored a book with a professor at Florida State about it was the first Obama election. And essentially what we found in the book was that in Florida, a president's coattails are very, very minimal. So President Obama won in 2008, However, nothing really changed below there. And so, you know, I think we went into this 2020 election kind of anticipating the same thing. But, you know, we were told by a lot of pollsters and others that we should really anticipate a blue wave in Florida at the legislative level. You know, there were some political operatives who were very entrepreneurial. And for the first time I've been around Florida politics, they were able to secure the number I've heard is about $25, $30 million. It may have been more at the end of the day of national money to fund Democrat candidates in state legislative races.
Right.
And so I think the incoming speaker and the incoming Senate president who run those campaign functions felt like, you know, they were had their backs against the wall to defend their incumbents. And the predictions were the Republicans would lose possibly 2 or 3 seats in the Senate, and that they would lose, you know, between 5 and 10 seats in the House. And it turned out to be a blue mirage more than a blue wave. I oftentimes tell people that I believe Florida really is a red state. And every 4 years, the national media convinces people it's purple. But if you look at the composition of our statewide elected officials and of our legislature, you know, we've now, after these elections, we've got a Speaker Sprouls will take the gavel, I think 2 votes shy of a supermajority. Senate President Simpson looks like rather than losing 2 or 3 seats, he may pick one up down in Miami, which is to me tells a great story of the election. Probably a whole nother podcast there. But look, I think you've got a between the governor and the speaker and the Senate president, you've got 3 politicians who put a lot of their political capital on the line. And I think you'll see them come back and govern with that wind in their sails for sure.
And were there 1 or 2 races that really kind of surprised you either way, red or blue?
Yeah, one of the races that was just super important to me personally was Vance Lupus's race down in Miami. You know, Vance is, he's a wonderful person. He's been a friend for a long time, but he's also a huge champion of our industry.
Right.
And look, Vance is in a seat where it really probably shouldn't be a Republican, but because of who Vance is and the way that he is deemed in that community, is seen in that community, he was able to win the seat 2 years ago. I think by a point. And so if there's a blue wave, Vance gets washed out to sea. At the end of the day, I think Vance won by 13 or 14 points. It just goes to show you that voters are very well informed. I mean, they paid attention to what was happening in their elections, and Vance was able to turn his people out. Also, you know, you go up the road in Palm Beach, Mike Caruso, similar situation, just a fantastic lawmaker who, if there's a blue wave, would not have come back. And then, you know, on the Senate side, you know, you could see a situation where the Anna Terry Flores seat would have flipped from Republican to Democrat, and the David Simmons seat up in Seminole County, probably a lot of people said that would flip from Republican to Democrat. Senator Simpson was able to hold both those seats with Anna Marie Rodriguez and Jason Broder. So those were, you know, I wouldn't say they're surprising, but the prognosticators weren't predicting that. And then, you know, the big one is down in Senate District 37, which as of our recording today, I think we're still retabulating those votes as Florida law lays out.
And Slater, you mentioned that we have new leadership coming in both the Florida House and the Senate. Tell the audience what they should know about our new Speaker of the House and Senate President.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you've got 2 leaders who, you know, are bold reform guys. Senate President Simpson and Speaker Sprouls are not caretaker types of people. I think they realize they have 2 years in these positions to advocate for the public policies that are important to them. I think you'll see these are 2 guys who keep their foot on the gas pedal to further reforms that have happened over the past 2 or 3 years that are important to them, and to you know, help their members be successful, which I think is something very important to these leaders. It's not as much about their own agendas as it is about those of their members. They come from 2 very different places. They're in different places in their lives. Speaker Sprouls and his wife are young parents. The speaker came up as a gang prosecutor, so he's seen the worst of things in our society. And on the other hand, you've got Senate President Simpson, whose son just got engaged this past weekend, who's in a different place in his career. He's a very, very successful, diversified businessman who his kind of core business is being an egg farmer. You know, I think both of them are tuned in to how important our industry is. You know, I think as you see the difference that the government in Florida, how Florida is choosing to tackle the pandemic versus how California is choosing to handle the pandemic, I think there's a lot of natural inertia by a lot of California-based production to take a look elsewhere. And I think that the speaker and the Senate president and the governor certainly and their leadership teams are taking notice of the opportunity to bring more business to Florida and put more Floridians back to work.
Well, Slater, it certainly isn't breaking news to pretty much anybody listening to this podcast, and obviously not you as well, that our industry's had some challenges in Tallahassee the last 4 years, particularly in the Florida House. How do you see the new leadership impacting our industry? You alluded to it there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, look, John, here's what I'd say. Again, it goes back to if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Right.
I think the Florida House, particularly over, you know, the past decade or so, has been a very libertarian leaning body, largely has been very clear on policy. They don't believe in economic incentives, whether that's an economic incentive for someone building rocket ships or someone making films or someone, you know, trying to create a drug to cure cancer. They just, I think in the DNA of the Florida House is don't think it's government's role to choose winners and losers in terms of different sectors of the economy. A dollar that you put into helping Hertz rental car move to Florida is a dollar you don't put into something else. And so, you know, there's been a lot there. But, I think one of the things about the film industry is you and your leadership team have worked on some policy formation that is designed not to cost the state any money, but incentivize jobs. In fact, to return the state money on their investment that the state can invest in other things like education. And so I think it's really been a nice opportunity to shift, or as Wayne Gretzky would say, to skate to where the puck is going.
Right.
So I think, you know, the industry has done that really well, and the confluence of that and what's happening in other states that are still locked down, I think it's a really interesting time, and it could end up, when we look back, being a historic time for film in Florida. I do think that since you've been with Film Florida as the executive director, going back to if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, there have been members of the legislature who have pushed several initiatives that would have either intentionally or unintentionally really hurt our industry.
Right.
And in all three instances, Film Florida and our members and our executive committee was able to get in front of the right people to see the other side, as Paul Harvey would say, to see the rest of the story. It first happened with the sales tax rebate that was set to be eliminated, which is a huge, huge impact to our industry and people coming here. We then saw it with the desire to deregulate everything under the sun. And the FFEAC was one of, I think, two or three entities that ended up being preserved.
Yeah.
Well, hundreds more were sunsetted. You can then look also at the regulation of talent agents, which is kind of in that same conversation.
Right.
So, I think over the last 3 or 4 years, Film Florida has pivoted from an old school playbook that just wasn't going to get the job done anymore to talking about things that are important, finding solution-based ways to collaborate with policymakers, while talking about a way that we can play an important part of rebuilding our economy post-pandemic. So, I think the water's just fine in Tallahassee. It's finding the nexus between policies and politics that everyone's comfortable with.
That makes a lot of sense. And Slater, we're obviously still in the middle of the pandemic. You've talked about it a little bit, but that's going to affect the budget going forward for the legislature. Talk about some of the specific impacts the pandemic has had on budgeting when it comes to the upcoming legislative session.
Yeah, well, look, the Florida legislature, as you know, kind of since the late 90s at least, has been a very, very conservative budgeting body. Florida is unique in that, as you know, we don't have a state income tax.
Yep.
The lion's share of our revenues are produced via sales tax. And therefore, you know, we learned after 9/11 that when people stop traveling on airplanes, the budget takes a huge hit.
Yes.
We learned during the housing crisis that when people stop paying property taxes, the government takes a huge hit. And so the good news is Florida is now the third largest state in the country. We overtook New York. Fun fact, our budget is about exactly half of what New York's budget is.
Right.
So to put that in perspective, we have more people than they have in New York, but our budget is half of what their state budget is. And so, A, we don't have high taxes like New York, but B, our legislature's been able to save a rainy day fund. And it's raining now. And if not for the rainy day fund, there'd be significant cuts to services that it's looking like the leaders won't need to make. Having said that, revenue collections continue to be down. And, you know, there are going to be cuts made that are going to be necessary to do what the Constitution requires the legislature to do in terms of balancing the budget.
So, you know, in summary and in lay terms, the situation is bad, but it's not catastrophic because they've planned for these type of things.
Yeah, John, well said. I think Florida has the ability to rebound better than any other state. And look, we compete with 49 states every day for jobs, right?
Right.
And so I think given what the last couple legislatures have done and what's happened, and look, Rick Scott gets a lot of credit. Governor Scott did a fabulous job with the state's bond rating and being fiscally conservative. Governor DeSantis has led throughout this pandemic with an even hand. You know, he certainly invested where he needed to early on, making sure the states had things like masks, et cetera. But look, Governor DeSantis is a fiscal conservative, and where most states have blown through their CARES money, I think Florida still is sitting on about $4 billion worth of CARES money, which the CFO, Jimmy Patronis, shared with me recently. By not spending that money, he's been able to invest that money. And so far it's returned $70 or $80 million between the rainy day fund, the CARES fund, the interest we've earned on CARES money, and presumably another federal stimulus. I think Florida is positioned to make some strategic investments that allow us to further distinguish ourselves from other states. And I think our industry is in a super interesting place to play a very meaningful role in that.
Well, Slater, for those listening that want to help our industry's efforts, you've talked about it a little bit. As you are representative on the front lines, what can people listening do to help from home?
You know, one of the things that we've collectively tried to do in our time working together, right, is create a chorus of voices supporting the industry. Look, there are 120 members of the Florida House and 40 members of the Florida Senate. And although we really work hard to build relationships with all of them, people in the district are so important to these elected officials. And so I would encourage everyone to reach out to your representative and your senator and just let them know how important this industry is and how important it is to put food on your table and really try to connect with them in that way, because it's incredibly meaningful. Republican, Democrat, you know, independent, it's people like to hear how their constituents are affected by public policy.
And as we continue to tell people, and then for those that are listening, if you don't know who your local legislators are, just reach out to us. We're happy to find out who those people are and give you the contact information and probably give you a little bit of backstory on each of them so you go into your conversation knowing a little bit of where they stand. So Slater, I know this is an extremely busy time for you, so I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us. On behalf of everybody in our industry here in Florida, thank you for your continued dedication and support for our industry.
Look, John, I look forward to flying the W with you at the end of this session, my friend. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for being on the podcast, Slater.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Film Florida Podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org or visit our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at teespring.com/stores/filmflorida. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.